Welcome into the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a member of the 1012 Podcast Network, and you can check out more great Big 12 content at 1012 Podcast Network. We are so glad to be a part of them, and we are going to be adding them to our intro moving forward. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. It helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends wherever you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week, and I'm joined by a man who refuses to watch Yellowstone, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
I like Ryan Bingham. I heard he's on that show. I'm not saying if my parents love a show, I can't love it. It just feels like everyone I know that loves it so hard doesn't like any of the shows that I like. Like, now I'm not saying it's not pretty and it's not expensive and there's not rural justice, you know, and it appeals to a lot of folks. So I'm obviously in the minority here, much like folks who aren't cast in Yellowstone. But I am here to talk all about, you know, the fighting Josh Allen's, Jay Novacek, Dick Cheney's, Ken Pomeroy's, Jerry Buss's, the fighting Wyoming Cowboys.
We are 16 days away from the season, which seems just absolutely insane to say out loud, but praise wherever you choose to praise. We're encroaching on college football season rapidly. And so we are going week by week through each of the Texas Longhorn opponents on their schedules in reverse order this year to make things and keep things fresh. But if you haven't, if you're new to us, that's what we do each and every week over the 12 weeks leading up to the season. We go through every opponent on Texas's schedule. So you can go back and listen to each and every one of those. But we are into non-conference territory this year. It's really when I start to get the tingles. But we are covering Wyoming today, Texas's non-conference closer. And so to do that, we have Jeremy Moss from the Mountain West Wire here to help us preview the non-conference matchup with Wyoming. So, Jeremy, how you doing today?
Doing all right, man. You say 16 days? Whew, it's coming quick. Week zero, week and a half, it's crazy.
That's 16 days for Longhorn football. The week zero is even closer. I mean, this stuff is, it is officially football time. It's in the air. Preseason's happening. It's fall camps are getting into the good meaty part. This is the real deal, baby.
Yes, definitely. Can't wait. It'll be exciting.
I said it last week. I always judge this time of year. Like when the high school teams get on the field, that's when it really starts to feel really real to me. I drove by the high school the other day going to run some errands. I was like, oh, they're having two-a-days. It's time. It is officially
time.
It's really real. So enough about my local football team. Let's talk about the Cowboys. So last year, Wyoming pulled off like some upsets early in the season, right? They knocked off Tulsa. Open up non-con by beating Air Force to open up Mountain West Conference play. They started the season 7-3 and then dropped the last two regular season games in the bowl game. So, like, I want to, like, in a retrospective, like, what was the difference between, like, early season and late season Wyoming?
That's kind of how they played. Their schedule is back in with tougher teams, and that hurts them. Like, the Air Force win's a pretty big one. It's sort of an upset. Kind of depends how you feel about the Falcons because they're always a freaking mess, triple attack and what Troy Calhoun does. But part of Wyoming was it was kind of a schedule thing when you're playing the better teams, because there was a point like they were undefeated, like they were winning games of conference play, beating Air Force, beating everybody as they showed in the schedule. But when you end your last couple of weeks of the season playing the teams that are playing for the conference championship, Wyoming just wasn't quite there. Was nothing they did wrong or bad, because you end with Boise and Fresno. Like, they almost beat Boise. He said 2017 very close. Fresno, not even close on the road, got their butt kicked. But that's all basically what it was, the scheduling of just kind of got tougher down at the end. Because the losses they had, the BYU game was a pretty good test because they're sitting at 3-1. And Illinois also, who the heck knew they'd be that good? Right. I remember that 38-6 loss. I'm like, what's going on here? But I guess the Illini are pretty good at football this past year. But I remember the BYU game is close to about halftime. And the loss they have, think about it, San Jose State with Shavon Cordero, good above-average offense. Same with Boise, same with Fresno State. And as we've discussed more, Wyoming doesn't really have a good offense. So if their teams are scoring 20-ish points or so, it might be difficult for them to win. And so that's why some of these lower games, like 27-20 Hawaii, barely beating Colorado State, who wasn't that great, 14-13. So it's just an offensive thing. When they play teams with firepower, which Texas should have, and we believe they would have this year, it'll be difficult. That's kind of what it was, just the scheduling and playing teams with a good offense. Like holding Boise to 20 points and even Fresno to 30, not terrible, not amazing for that Fresno one, but that's basically what it was. The offense couldn't get anything done, which is kind of par for the course, but it was just most of who they played. And the other team's offense scored just enough to get the win. And Wyoming's offense can't really keep pace if it gets above like 24 points, which is going to be a problem this game, I think.
So thinking of their offense, right, it was certainly not great. I think 112 in the F plus is where I saw them clock in at. It's consistent coaching staff. You kind of know what you're going to get. Last year's recipes for success when they had it was run the ball, but passing it was not great. I mean, what have they done this off season to try to improve just being not good in the offensive side of the ball?
The one thing I'll say that Craig Bull, the head coach, lies to us every spring when he goes, we're going to throw the ball. We're going to open it up. And it's one of those things that's like, coach, don't lie to our face. You brought in Tim Polasek from Iowa to be your offensive coordinator a couple years ago. So I'm like, we know what you're doing. And they do a good job at it. They have Xavier Valade, who just signed, I think, with the Steelers today. They've had Brian Hill of the NFL. They've had multiple running backs go move on and do well, either next level or a bunch of transfers, which kind of sad. There's, I think, Isaiah Nair is still with UT right there because he's a wide receiver, and he didn't play last year, I believe. But, like, they had some talents. But the running game was supposed to be – it always has been, like, their strength. However, the dreaded ACL tear came to Dwayne McNeely, so he's out for the year. They brought in transfers from Northern Illinois, who is – he should be back. He should be back this year in a couple weeks, like Harris Whaley. I don't think he'll be ready. There, it's like an iffy. It's like, well, maybe. And then DQ James, who had a pretty good end of the season last year, he's still not doing great. He's had torn ACL. And so he's had over a year. I believe it was I'm trying to think how long it happened, but he's not quite ready yet. So there's a lot of guys who we might be ready, but the guys they brought in, it's going to be obviously with them playing Texas early on, they're probably not going to be available. There's been some good stuff about LJ Richardson, the redshirt freshman, and the offensive line lost a couple of starters last year. I believe three, and they're still having a couple of redshirt freshmen for like a left guard spot or something, which not great. But the thing we know about them on running the ball, they're going to eventually be pretty good and above average within the conference. They're not going to be Air Force, which very few teams are. That could be what like Boise State has because they have a pretty good duo, but that's an area where there is a strength of them. But the problem is Andrew Pease, the quarterback, completes maybe 50% of his passes. He can move a little bit with his legs on the ground, but he's had experience, which is a good thing, been on for a couple of seasons, but Craig Bull doesn't throw the ball, which is fine. But again, don't lie to us. We say, oh, we're going to open it up. I'm like, give me 22 passes a game. Give me a little something. When he does complete above 50%, which is a very low bar to get to, obviously, you throw better, you play better. It's a kind of common sense. You know what I mean? I'd rather they're 60% than 42%. But that's the thing. If he could be a bit more consistent throwing the ball, that honestly would go a long way, because when you have a team that kind of throws the ball, if he could at least like pretend to throw the ball, then you have the play action that can help out with the strong running game. It's kind of funny, but if you have a guy, if it's third and eight and they know you're throwing the ball no matter what, it's like, okay, we're going to blitz or do something and get after you. Or even if it's third and two, we know you're running the ball because there's no way you're doing play action on us because you can't throw the dang thing. So when you're too predictable, if he could be a little bit better, they do a little RPO, a little bit with Peasley, because they've had a couple of running backs like Levi Williams is now at Utah State. He ran a little bit. So that's all kind of what comes down to be is if they can legitimately throw a little bit better, it would go a long way because the defense is really that good. But that's what I would expect, a lot of running. But then again, it's all these inexperienced guys. So it's going to be a tough start when they're playing such a good team as Texas, when their strength has been they've been picked off by injuries the past month, and guys just not quite ready from injuries within the past year or so.
So let's talk about, you mentioned the coach wanting to run the ball quite a bit, and I think that's something we want to dive in on. Like, Titus Swen was the bell cow for them, I think, by design. He rushed for more than 1,000 yards, 8 touchdowns for them last year, but he's gone. He's with the Colts, I think, in the NFL. And so they've also lost Emmanuel Pregnan, who went over to USC, I think, in the portal. So, like, how are they going to facilitate like what they want to do on the ground, losing like two key pieces like that?
Well, no, McNeely's not healthy. All these guys who are supposed to step up, DQ is supposed to do something good as well. But I honestly, it's going to be a bunch of new guys. Like I mentioned, LJ Richardson, retro freshman, Sam Scott, retro freshman, Jamari Farrell, new guys on the roster. So it's going to be like when Craig Bullis is the first couple weeks, that means probably 6 weeks. Like, it's not starting when they play Texas Tech in a few weeks. Because when they play UT, it's what I believe, what, game number three on the season. It's a, what's the date on there? Yeah,
I think so, they do Tech, Portland State, Texas. So two of those correct, are incredibly tough.
Yeah, and then so that's what, week one, 3 weeks away. We're about two weeks away. So it's about 5 weeks. So maybe if those guys could do something and be available, that would help. But honestly, I trust Craig Bull and Polsek, what they've done. They've always seemed to find a guy, like, even though Titus Swin was the main guy later in the year, like it wasn't necessarily him who was the main guy at the end of the season. So they've had, they always have like a rotating set of guys. Okay, Swin was the main guy, but here's DQ, here's this guy, here's another running back, running back two, three, or four. A guy might get like a minimal workload. So like sample size to be considered, he may have to go off like 40 yards on 4 or 5 carries, which is solid, but that's not going to translate to get 10 to 20. So there's trust in there that he'll do it. But as of right now, with all these guys banged up and guys out for the year, I honestly am not sure who's available. That's the problem. We don't know who's around with the multiple injuries. Because they thought Harrison Whaley from Northern Illinois, who is solid, to come in, and but he's still recovering. That's all, you know, coaches are, oh, we won't give you season-ending injuries notes, or unless it is that, or week to week. Some coaches, obviously, not as varies. They're like, oh, we only talk if they're out for the year. We won't speculate if they're going to be gone for less than that. And so that's always a concern or issue with trying to figure out who's doing what at these college programs, because they're all different. But again, I think the offense will want to be solid, even though they're losing a couple starters. But I don't know who is going to be with everybody kind of a few weeks out, and again, the ACL tear. So it's not to evade the answer, but I know it'll be strength, but it'll be there. I could see this, like, maybe not necessarily versus Texas, but Portland State easily, maybe Texas Tech, because their defense is, maybe not, they want to sling the ball around Joey McGuire. So there'll be opportunities. They may have some guy come out of nowhere and do reasonably well in those games, but it's just waiting. And luckily, when they play Texas a couple weeks in, so maybe Whaley's ready, maybe DQ's ready, a couple guys, but it's probably going to be a committee with these couple guys being out and injured, and with Titus Swin moving on. So it's going to be, we'll know it when we see it, but it may take a couple games to figure out who's like one or two, one A, one B running back. So that's kind of what Craig Bull does. So we'll have a main guy, and then this number two guy could have a random game, a couple games where he's the top guy, but he's going to get a good amount of carries to complement. But it's going to be some young guy we haven't seen before. That's going to be a cause for concern early on.
So we don't need to talk passing game, because I think it's relatively non-existent. And I remember the stat when he came over, Isaiah Nair was, I believe, 42% of their passing game the year before. I guess, actually, I'm going to deviate us here. Hadn't planned to ask this. You watched Nair at Wyoming, and since Texas fans were really jazzed about him last year, and then he tears the ACL, doesn't get to see. We know there's some other weapons in the Texas receiver room, but just as someone who's covered and watched Nair, what should Texas fans expect from him, if assuming he's at full health?
Well, he averaged 20 yards an attempt and 12 touchdowns. He was scored a touchdown every, 44 catches for 12. What's that, 1 in 4? That's a pretty good ratio. Not that he could replicate that in a Big 12, but then again, Big 12 defenses not known to be super stout for all these teams. And so, but his legit thing was a deep threat guy, led the conference, if I believe I'm correct, this year. Anybody who had over 30 receptions, he led the conference in yards per catch at 20 yards, 19.95. He didn't catch the ball a lot, but he didn't need to. Like, he's getting almost 70 yards a game on 3.5 catches of the contest. So his main thing is going deep and getting open downfield. And there are, like, okay, that's the Mountain West, but there are some, like, they play San Diego State, really good defense. Air Force has had a really good defense past couple of years. There's been some good cornerbacks who moved on to the NFL recently, not necessarily in his year, but like San Jose State has a pretty good pass defense. So it's not like he's going to get a bunch of nobodies out there, but his deep threat is likely to be the biggest asset to Texas.
Let's talk one more logistic question about Wyoming, then we'll get to maybe two more, and then we'll get to the fun stuff. But so Wyoming defensively returns like a ton of production. I think they're top like five or six tacklers from a year ago, which is a mixed bag because the defense was okay, not great last year, but you know, so you return some guys from a defense that was not great, but they also should have developed in a year, you know, going from sophomores to juniors. I think that I was looking at their stat sheet. I think their top like 5 or 6 tacklers were all sophomores a year ago. So nice crop of upperclassmen coming in. So like, what's the expectation for that unit, and can they slow people down so the offense can do what it needs to do?
Yeah, it's elite defense. Like, it's really, like, Easton Gibbs could probably be conference player of the year. They have a bunch of guys. Like, if you think of the past couple of years, like, not like just people who are in the know, just because not everybody follows Wyoming football. It's very tiny. Logan Wilson with the Bengals, really good NFL player. Right. Andrew Wingard, him getting smacked by Urban Meyer was hilarious a couple weeks ago. But he is like undrafted guy starting with the Jaguars. Like they have guys in the league who are playing good defense. They've and they've had guys who've like gone to unfortunately transferred out to like the USC. A couple guys who gone and done well, gone on to do well things. So they have like Devon Harris, who's really good defensive end. He had I think double digit sacks in TFLs last year. Easton Gibbs is elite, really, really good players. They'll have guys who will go to the next level of the NFL. But I'm like, look at what they did last year. It's tough when they played good offense. That's the thing they need to work on to be better. I was like, oh, you're playing a team that's really good, who can throw the ball and pass the ball and do lots of different things well. Like when they played San Jose State, they don't run the ball very well, but they have an experienced quarterback who's good. They play Boise State. I know Talon Green was inexperienced, was late in the year. They had good running back, solid receiver. Fresno State, like, they lost everybody. Jay Kaner's gone. He's in with the Saints. Jelano Moreno Cropper, I'm not sure he's in the NFL. Jordan Mims is in the NFL somewhere. Like, of all these guys who play elite offenses. And so that's hard. Even if you're a really good defense, teams will break through. And then again, they held Boise to 20 points for a really against a pretty good offense. And Fresno put up 30, which isn't outrageously amount of points, but it's still a good amount. So that's their struggle when they play, when their talent level they're going up against is better or even the same as them. They could struggle a bit, but that's like with a lot of teams. If you're going up against a team that's even talent or a little bit better than you, there will be a few issues. But I think the defense could be – I think Fresno will probably be best amount in West Wyoming. It'll be probably top three. And there's always some good defenders within the league, like Leighton Vander Esch with the Cowboys doing very good things the past couple of years. There's a lot of good players. Like there's these Vigil brother guys from Utah State who are doing stuff in the NFL across the league. So there's a lot of good players on defense. But I think it'll be – this will be one of the better – defenses in the conference. I think up front where they're going to be have their strength. And I know Texas has Bijan Robinson, but it's like, well, they got somebody else back there's probably really good as well. And so it's going to be tough for them. But I think they could have some resistance against most teams, even good teams. They play Texas or Texas Tech and even the better teams of the Mountain West. And well, it may not last very long. It might be like sporadically, like, oh, they are good in the first quarter, second quarter, where some of these games like probably not. I think Texas will probably just take care of business easy, but I can see a couple drives here or there, like, oh, look what Wyoming did here. They force a three and out or a 5-play drive of like 9 yards or 12 yards, something that might make your eyebrow raise. Like, wait a second, I thought we're supposed to roll over these guys and just kick them to the curb and be out of here. It won't always be like that, but there will be times where they'll make some plays and some Texas fans may be like, wait, this team is where's Laramie? They have a guy in a barrel in a cowboy hat, suspenders there at Darryl K. Royal Stadium on the sideline somewhere. It's like, They'll cause a little bit of trouble, but not enough to make any Texas fan or any Texas fan sweat. Texas Tech, though, I do think if they had running backs, I think there could be a cause for concern going for the Red Raiders going to Laramie, but probably not now. But they'll do a few plays where it might be like, wait a second, I thought have all these guys that are way better than these guys who live in the mountains in a town of like 4,000 people.
I selfishly wish that Tech had to go to Laramie at the end of the season when it was just, you know, bone chillingly cold. But alas, it will be a season opener. But so I'm curious, all of that said, right, with a very good, you know, conference defense, a coach who knows how to do just enough to pretty much get himself to a bowl every year. What is your prediction this year for the Cowboys with, you know, you've talked about they need to find the identity in the running game, which is going to be their identity, find the guys. Defense should be very good. If the passing game is anything, we'll see. But what is your prediction for this year where they finish?
I think it's 7-5, and we've done our preview similar to this. We go about once a week, and this was before the injuries came out. So I had them losing to Texas Tech, Texas, a couple conference games because their league slate, Fresno, Air Force, Boise State, that's probably the top teams of the conference. They probably lose to App State now, I'm thinking, if they don't have good running backs in the mix. Because even though App State's not amazing this year, they're kind of taking a step back. But they're going to a bowl game. They'll probably do well overall, but they're going to be led by their defense. It's going to be a typical Craig Bowl. They go to a bowl game. Wyoming fans want more. But like their non-conference slate's not easy. Texas Tech will be pretty good. Texas, obviously, really good. App State's always good. They're not as great as normal, but
solid.
Yeah, it's quite good. Then Portland State, whatever. And then the road games in league play, Air Force, Boise State, like those are difficult. They got Fresno. So it's a tough schedule. At least they host Hawaii this year, which is kind of nice for them. But I'd say 7, maybe 8. I'd probably have to cap it at 7 wins with the running back injuries. But if they can throw the ball, like if Andrew Peasley takes a little step forward and they find some transfer wide receivers coming in, I don't expect them to do a ton. But they may have to be maybe forced to throw the ball a little bit more. And the defense takes a step up, but I'm still thinking 7 wins. I saw some people like they compete for the conference. I'm like, I know there's no division, so it's you can have 2 losses to be fine. So if they can pick off somebody who they should not lose to, they could be in the conference title game. But still, with that non-league slate, I think 7 wins is probably their max.
I like, though, the prediction is the coach named Bowl, who always makes a bowl, will be in a bowl.
It's Craig Bowling. That's all it is.
Let's move on to the segment that we are calling this year. I think it was the Hurry Up Offense, right? Rapid. We've named it like 6 or 7 different things, but Hurry Up Offense.
That's all good.
For this off. It's a meme. We change the name every offseason. It's just a thing we do. Really, because we have terrible short memories, but it's fine. It is what it is. So these are just some silly off-the-cuff questions that we want to ask you. So we'll start from a macro level, because you don't just cover Wyoming, you cover all of the Mountain West. So what is the best Mountain West Conference, like, regional food? Like, what are people, if you're going to eat, what's the food?
People say the Hatch Chili in New Mexico and Albuquerque. I've been there I went to University of Utah, so I was around that time as well. So been there. There's this one place in San Diego. Okay. It was about a year ago I went. It's called, it's right by the airport. It's a Mexican restaurant, obviously. Burritos, tacos, La Luchador, I think it's called. The restaurant's filled up as like Luchador Mexican wrestlers. Like, that's their whole attire around town, around the restaurant. It's super tiny. It holds like 12 people, but that's a great place. I think what else? Hawaii, I have not been there, but obviously probably good seafood, I'm guessing. Get some good.
Absolutely.
Trying to think what else. Wyoming. Applebee's, I don't know. Just
I feel like it's a Laramie campfire chili or something. I don't know. I'm giving them the cowboy credit.
There is some bar that people go to nearby, but I haven't been there in years because I've been to Air Force a couple times. And then I would say, trying to think what else would be off the top of my head, I've been to Fresno. There's a go to like Mission Burrito. There's a place nearby there. My buddy who coaches with me heads out there. You drive a little bit of ways, but Vegas has whatever you want. Essentially, they get a Whataburger now. So Whataburger, that's awesome. They'll get that pretty soon. So that's usually above average food. It's a pretty good burger. I was in Dallas a couple weeks ago, so I tried that. But Vegas, you get whatever you want. So, but I would definitely say Albuquerque gets some Mexican food, stuff like that. So that's my favorite. So that's why I lean toward anyways.
You know what's funny is when I thought about that question, I didn't think about Hawaii and Vegas. Like, I went stereotypically in the mountains. I didn't even, like, idiot. I wasn't even thinking. I knew there was some California, but I wasn't even thinking. You have Las Vegas, which has everything, and Hawaii, which is obviously one of the most fun regional cuisines in the country. So great answer. I have a question for you, and I know you covered the entire conference, so I have some loaded, if you need them, prompts here. But dream NIL pairing, Texas obviously all about the NIL deals, between any player, and it can be a local or national establishment, for the Wyoming Cowboys.
I would say the best player in the league is Torrey Horton. Wide receiver, CSU. He's really we did our top 50 countdown. I'll give people who knows who'll listen, but we're still counting it down. He's our number one player for the year. And to pair him up, it's not sure of what brand it would be, but he's legit. Like, Rams, like, if you're NFL fans, like Rashard Higgins, you've had Michael Gallup with the Cowboys, all these wide receivers would be amazingly good. So I think him being just as good as he can be, that's a great person to go with. Quarterback. Jake Haner's gone. So can't you see him? You have all these upperclassmen guys are gone. Taylen Green of Boise State. He's going to be a name. He might be the up and comer riser if he can figure out, and with his full year and offseason, because he got thrown in last year. I'd say those two guys. I'm trying to think of a name type of guy. Oh, hold on. There's a guy from Air Force. His first name is Thor. He's offensive lineman. He just made our list of like 40 something. Thor. I wish I had his name. It's an odd name, but he has the first name Thor, so that could be something right there.
He doesn't need a second name with a name.
I know. Chris Hemsworth. I'm just saying, like, what Air Force had West at Steelhammer a couple years ago.
Right.
They have Thor playing offensive line, so I'd go with him. I'm going to look it up now. Just say Thor. That's all you got to do. Go with him. That's the best name right there. That's the best guy. And he's good, too. He's probably being a first-team all-conference player as well by the end of the season.
I checked because the first guy you said was named Horton. Tim Hortons has not come to the Mountain West. I think the closest might be like Ohio. Well, no, they're in Ohio, Pennsylvania, some of the, you know, close to the border states. There is a guy on the team named Buck Coors. I hope he gets a Coors Light. I hope he gets a Coors Light deal for his sake.
So, okay, here it is. It's Thor. I'm going to butcher his name too. Pagli Along. So let's just go with Thor.
Thor.
He's the center. Sarah. Perfect.
TP, Charmin toilet paper, is going to be what his NIL deal is. No, so we're going to keep this Wyoming focus. So, better classic TV show. Chips, starring Larry Wilcox from Rawlings, Wyoming. Little Rascals, starring Mickey Daniels from Rock Springs, Wyoming. Or Charles in Charge, starring Michael Perlman from Jackson, Wyoming.
Oh man, Mickey, what was the second one again? Repeat that middle one.
Little Rascals.
Chips, Little Rascals. Okay.
Well, let's go Little Rascals. I've seen, it's, we're younger. We've seen the movie. It's not as great a TV show. Go with that. That's a good one. That's a fun one.
I like it. Good answer.
Good answer.
UT's campus holds, 52,000 students, another, call it roughly 8,000 in faculty, staff, et cetera, 60,000 people, give or take. Laramie, I believe when I checked, is a city of 32,000 people. There have been some people to go between them. You mentioned Isaiah Nair. Also, Fred Akers famously coached at Wyoming before coming to Texas. And people of a certain age will remember Oscar Giles from Mac Brown's staff, who's now the run game coordinator at Wyoming. So for the folks who are traveling down, however many of them there are from Wyoming to the big city of Austin, what warnings will you give the slow moving wide open spaces about the big city living of Austin, Texas, and the Big 12?
It's gonna be hot, man. That's all I can tell. It's hot. Like, I've been to Texas. I grew up there. It's hot. I was there in Dallas in July. 1:10. Is this a, what time is this kickoff? It's a midday because it's on Longhorn Network, right?
Oh, it's a 7. It's 7 p.m.
It's 7. Okay, thank God. Thank God.
It's no Alabama middle of the day game from last year. Nothing like that.
Golly, no.
So heat will be a concern for them. I know there's plenty of places to go by. That's what I'd recommend. Like, I know it'll be hot. Coming down, just have fun and explore the. Here's the thing about college football. The game's great. They know they're not going to win this game. If you're a Wyoming fan, like, we're going to win, I'm like, you're lying to yourself. Go and have fun. Go down 6th Street. Find a Torchy's. Go there. Go find great food nearby. Do something. Get yourself some breakfast tacos. Find the great bar or something. Go spend a day or two. When Michigan came to University of Utah to play Friday morning, everybody walk around downtown doing their maize and blue, see what's going on. Go explore the town. That's what I would tell anybody to any college football game you go to you've never been to. I know somehow years ago UT came up to Laramie for some sort of 2-for-1. I don't know if this is part of that. I don't recall if this was part of that series, but just explore the town. Even if when UT fans were coming up to Wyoming, like, go see what's around. Like, go.
Oh, yeah.
That's my recommendation. Any place you go that's brand new and you know you're probably never going back for a long time, go explore the area. Go a day early, go Friday. Don't just go to the day of the game and come back. That's no fun. Just explore and figure out what's going on. That's what I'd recommend doing. Go find your local Austin travel agent and say, hey, what can I do on a Friday and maybe Sunday morning? Because you're probably leaving Sunday. If you're going back to Laramie, not a direct flight, got a couple connections, probably flying into Denver or Colorado Springs and driving up the hour to get back home. So that's what I recommend. Just check out the town. Go have some fun.
I love it. Always that is the best recommendation. Even if you've regularly been to Austin, there's probably a new restaurant you can check out, or wherever you're going. That's the beauty of college football, is find something new, find a new favorite in a town that's not your own. So, man, Jeremy, thank you so much for joining us tonight. If folks want more of what you've got to offer, where can they find you on the internet?
Yeah, check us out, MWR.com, MWCR on Twitter. We'll have stuff going, obviously, a podcast, written stuff. Just kind of search our website. We'll have it all there. And we cover the whole league. So if Texas does anything else, they transfer. Hey, transfers like to go to the Big 12 and SEC, so you never know. Get to know all these guys that come to town. But can I ask my question to you guys real quick, my comments?
Yeah, that's
yes, right. Please.
So, all right. Hopefully, if this fails, just cut it out of the podcast. It never happened. Is it? Can we cook?
We can agree to that.
Agreed.
We can agree to that.
Okay. Chris Sims or Major Applewhite in that year when they lost to Colorado? What should Mac Brown should have done?
Ooh.
Anything else is a fair answer?
I am of the opinion that Major Applewhite should have played every down that the two of them were on the team, and that's not just because Chris Sims is an a-hole.
They're both a-holes.
Also an a-hole.
Well,
I grew up loving Major. I don't know. I am biased.
I agree with you. That's my answer, because that blocked punt in the title, like, he would have, like, it was too late when they put him in. They would have been the Rose Bowl that year, if I recall. Like, Come on. What would you, so what's the other answer here? Are you a Chris Sims guy? Because I put you by yourself here.
No, no, gosh, no, no. It's also hard to stand for Major Applewhite because Major Applewhite has burned essentially every bridge that he has ever
played. Had a pretty incredible downfall.
Yeah.
But the time, I thought he was the guy.
That's right. Oh, yeah, it's all on a humanity, like a human level.
Yeah. There are plenty of football players that are terrible people that I stand for, but none of them have done the things that Major Applewhite allegedly did.
Interesting. Okay, I'm not familiar with that, but I always remember watching a game. I'm sitting there, was it 2001 or something? Like, I know it's Sims' name, but he doesn't seem to be playing very well, and it's too little too late. I'm like, come on, they're gonna play very well. They're just stupid Colorado. So I just want to get that out there to other people because it's just a personal thing. I'm like, what do these guys think? Because I randomly think about it when I hear his name. I'm like, he was a pretty good Texas quarterback, not amazing, but I just remember that year. I'm like, what's going on, Coach Brown? The freshman, Chris Sims, can wait a year or something. Or whatever year it was he was playing. So
whatever it may have been. So know, Jeremy.
So long ago.
That was quite a long time. Jeremy, if folks want to find you on the internet, man, brother, where can they look you up?
Myself, if you go to Jeremy Moss on, I'll still say Twitter, I don't care. It's MAUSS, so you can find me doing nonsense there with the Mountain West stuff. I also cover like Utah, BYU for a radio station I work for in town. So I do random stuff with them. So Pac-12 is interesting, all that type of stuff going on. Now, I guess the Big 12, or Big 12 friends now, I don't know. That's what's going for at least half a year with BYU coming to town. So I do a bunch of stuff with that on a radio show I work on there in Salt Lake City. So just go to MWC Wire and you'll probably find my name, Jeremy Moss, hanging around there on Twitter and whatnot. But yeah, it's here. We're less than 2 weeks away. It's all the stuff 3 weeks ago. I'm like, it was interesting and fun. Honestly, made me really sad. I just want to watch football games and see what happens.
Us too.
Just play the dang game. All right, Gerald, as much as we might want to talk about the hit show Yellowstone after talking about Wyoming for 30 minutes, it's now time to take a look at the world through some burnt orange lenses. And it continues to be awards season or awards watch list season, I guess, for Texas. I'll powerbomb through the first few of these. One of them I do want to talk about. Bednarik, no surprise there. Jalen Ford seems to be on every list for defensive players this year, deservedly so. Lombardi Award for the best lineman, either side of the ball. Ford slipped in there. Banks and Sanders, so lineman adjacent, people who sometimes put their hand on the ground. The Manning Award, Quinn Ewers, not yet Manning on the Manning Award watch list. And then the one of these that I think is the most interesting, annually the Bruce Feldman list of freaks comes out, and that is meant to be an incredible compliment, not an insult. Our guy, Byron Murphy, getting his due.
We have talked about for a long time how Byron Murphy looked like a grown man when he was 17, right? He came to Texas with a mortgage and an ex-wife is really what it was, but 455-pound front squat, 375-pound power clean. Insane, right? And rumors are that he probably could have done more if Tory Becton hadn't shut him down. But, like, those are insane numbers. Absolutely insane numbers. Like, I have done a front squat, and I don't know. At this stage of my life, I don't know if I could do 45-pound front squats. I could, but you get the joke.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it in our defensive line preview. I believe specifically I called Murphy out as, you know, one of the most important players on this defensive unit. He has a chance to really, truly be the center of everything the way Coburn has been in the past. And we've had some other defensive tackles in the past. He's just so strong and can hold such a point in the line that if he really makes the step that we think he can in the plays, because he also gets after the quarterback, but just a guy who could really raise the floor and ceiling of the Texas defense. Gerald, we had some folks come out this week in the latest Hall of Honor class. There are a ton of folks here, so I'm going to run through and then you tell me if you want to add any color to this. But Beth Barr for women's in swimming and diving, Jamie Carey with women's basketball, two-time All-American for Carey, four-time All-American for Beth Barr, Quan Cosby, a name we know from the football, David Denny, baseball in the 80s, a incredible hitter, contact hitter, especially Gia Dunan, rowing recent times 13-17, Dr. Kelly McDonald Freeman for soccer, Chris Kirchner for men's swimming in the early 80s. James H. Means Jr. from track and field in the 60s. Jonathan Scott, football, on the 05 championship team, multi-time All-American. Incredible, incredible lineman in his time. Susan Schur, women's track and field. And my guy, Jordan Spieth, which some of these made me feel old. Spieth certainly was one of them, 2011 to 12 when he was on campus. We know what he did at UT and also since. So, Gerald, who do you want to shout out here?
I mean, one, Cosby Scott and Spieth all make me confront my own mortality in a way I'm not ready for. But James Means is a guy who doesn't get talked about a lot, and it honestly took him long enough to get him in. But James Means has the distinction of being the first African-American student athlete at the University of Texas, and became the first African-American to compete in the Southwest Conference, period. And he did that as a walk-on in 1963. He took the track at Ammon's Carter Stadium in Fort Worth at the time, and absolutely kind of broke barriers. So it's awesome to shout out, and I think it's great that he's finally getting the recognition he deserves.
That's very cool. I didn't know about that until I saw this list. I always had the assumption Julius Whittier was the first. Obviously, that's football, but that's really cool. I hate that I didn't know that story, but I'm glad there's some light being shined on that. Quan Cosby, what a guy. We'll always remember a couple of his plays, some bone-crushing blocks, some incredible catches, that Fiesta Bowl performance. I love that he's stuck around the Longhorn family and been a radio and sideline guy and just been around, because he's just incredibly lovable. But yeah, top to bottom, you can go into the details of any of that list and find someone who is just wildly impressive. So great class. And like I said, some of these guys are not old enough to be there. Gerald, one more piece of news here came out on Tuesday, I believe. Volleyball, in addition to being number one in the Big 12, they also, as we hoped and thought they might be, were the consensus number one team in the first whole of the season, just before they kick off the season here next week. They play, now that we have rankings for everyone, 11 top 25 matchups this year. There's a couple in the Big 12, Gerald. I mean, we know Texas dominates the Big 12 in volleyball, but there's some decent talent, especially with the new teams.
Yeah, I mean, Baylor, obviously, annual rivalry with them. BYU is a perennial, not power, but they're a player in the national scene every year. And Houston is more, a more recent addition to that annual power, but they've had some good teams in recent history.
Yeah, that's Baylor at 15, BYU at 17. Houston's at 19. City of Houston stepping up. Rice was also at 23, who was on Texas's schedule. So some Texas teams with Baylor, Houston, and Rice all in the top 25. And then some Texas players who've gone on to the NFL. It was opening preseason week. You tell me which of these is your favorite of the week, and I'll let you ISO on it. Justin Tucker, Devin Duvernay, Roshan Johnson, or DeMarvian Overshown?
Man, I gotta go Roshan Johnson for me. He was trending on Twitter. Like, that's how big Roshan was. I did not expect it. I honestly thought something bad happened to him. I was like, oh, he just made two defenders run into each other because he juked them. It was very, very impressive to see.
Yeah, I think I counted on that run four like broken tackles. So my guy Roshan doing what he does, 12 tackles or 12 carries for 44 on that one. Tucker just had a casual 60 yarder and then hit it with the, what is that, impressive? Which I just love. Duvernay caught a touchdown. And also the player that he cooked in the goal line was Keely Ringo, which it felt kind of good.
Makes you feel good. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Ringo made big plays for Georgia. Would have loved him to make some of those big plays at Texas, but that's okay. I'm not salty. DeMarvian Overshown looked great against the Jags. He was Cowboys' leading tackler with six, two of those on third downs, including a big third and one stop on Tank Bigsby, which just I hope he screamed SEC at him. He also led the team like in their pregame huddle before the game, which I thought was very cool for a rookie playing his first preseason game. It shows he's got some leadership. But my play of the week was absolutely Devin Duvernay in the team, joint team practice, which we know those can get chippy. with San Francisco. There was a who started it, no one can know, but a Ravens receiver and a not Deshaun Jameson 49er defensive back started pushing, shoving, and a punch was thrown. And then out of nowhere, just the great neutralizer, Devin Duvernay swept in and just grabbed the dude like he's quick. And, you know, the guy went 4 whole years without a drop. You know, he's got hands. Just quickly grabbed the dude by the back of his, like, you know, horse collar and just took him down to the ground, ending the fight completely, which I thought was such a, like, dad move to do. I also, my favorite part of the entire fracas was Justin Tucker was right in the frame of the camera and he just put his helmet on and buckled the chin strap and walked out in the middle of it. He wasn't going to do anything, but he was going to talk his stuff because he's Justin Tucker, but he was also protected. The man is smart.
I mean, he's nothing if not a smart man. So I'm very proud of Tuck for that. Was always the like that was always the thing our coaches would probably ill-advisedly say to us in high school was like, always make sure you have your helmet on if things pop off. So some things never change.
All right, Joe, let's take us home with the final segment. A little bit of Godzillatron. What have you been watching on your giant screen?
Yeah, Kyle. So it was a an interesting week for me on the streaming stuff and all that. So my wife and I watched the Johnny Manziel doc on Netflix. It wasn't bad. It was good. It was a little flat almost, I think is the right way to say it. Like, I feel like because honestly, there's not a ton of resolution. Like, Johnny Manziel's still kind of the guy he was in college in a lot of ways. And there's I wish they had leaned into the mental health stuff that afflicted him, because I think that's probably one of the biggest things and areas of growth we've seen in sports in the last, you know, 10, 15, 20 years is the way that we understand and interpret and see athletes as people who can have mental health issues. You know, Johnny Manziel is diagnosed bipolar, and all of his behavior that was self-destructive behavior is absolutely like emblematic of somebody who's bipolar on a manic streak, right? Like, all of that is like, I can't stop, I don't know how to stop. All of that is very typical to somebody who struggles with the bipolar issues that he does. And so I think that's something that I wish they had leaned into a little bit more, but it was good. It was good to watch and refresh. I didn't realize that his year was also the Manti Te'o year, so like the overlap of those two is also very very impressive. My wife and I kicked off the new season of Only Murders in the Building. If you're not watching that, you're missing out. Very, very good season. Paul Rudd is like Paul Rudd doing the dumb golden retriever guy with depth to it that he does so well. It's perfect. And then I talked last week about how I took my son to go see the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. We had absolutely loved it. Well, I've been on a Ninja Turtles streak, and I've kind of been trying to do more reading. You know, I tell my kids to encourage them reading, like comic books count as reading, but I also like kind of secretly don't let myself live by that. And so a couple years ago, the people that originally wrote the Ninja Turtles back in the 80s, Eastman and Laird, put out what they came up with 30 years ago as like the final Ninja Turtle story. They worked with the new people that are writing it to put it out. And it was absolutely like, if you're a comic book person and you have any sort of affinity for the Ninja Turtles, even if you're not a comic book movie, it is a comic book person, it's incredible. Like, it is such a good read. It is way more emotional than it should be. And again, it pulls on all the right heartstrings. It pulls on the right things. It's just a really well-told story about revenge and what really matters in life and how do you define family. Like, some really deep themes for a story about turtles with swords. So I really enjoyed it. I had a blast reading it. So if you have a Kindle Unlimited membership, or you can get a free trial, it is absolutely free with Kindle Unlimited. So like, I read it on my iPad for free and it was dope.
I like that. I have not seen the Manziel doc. I've heard similar things also that Mike Evans gets no credit for that season, which is interesting. I like the untold stories. I recommend someone at work, the Manti Te'o one. He'd never heard of it. He's a South American guy who loves soccer, loves sports, just not a college football guy. And he came in and just was floored by it. It's kind of curious to hear that. And maybe if you don't know the Manziel story, maybe it still moves you in the same way. But I understand completely what you're saying there, Gerald, about that. I started the new season of Winning Time, which is the HBO show about the Lakers, the Showtime Lakers. I am not in any way a Lakers fan. In fact, I might be a Lakers hater. I don't know. They were Spurs arch nemesis in the 2000s, kept them from having back-to-back championships a couple times. But there is something just really compelling about watching that show. The actor they have playing Magic Johnson is unbelievable. He's just very charismatic and you know, brings and oozes that magic charm to the screen. The Jerry Buss, I think I talked about it in season one. Just the casting is tremendous. The timepiece of it all, the sets, the costumes, everything is pretty phenomenal. I know a little bit. I didn't, like, it's early 80s, so like I know a little bit of the trajectory, but I don't know all the details of the games and the stories, and so it's fun. I'm enjoying it. Also, keeping it sports, I guess, I started Hard Knocks, which I've only watched the first episode. I think the second one came out on Tuesday, but I haven't watched that yet. But it seems like it's going to be a great season. I always like Hard Knocks. I'm a sucker for like a behind the scenes sports documentary. And Hard Knocks is one of the OGs in the genre. Follow a team for a year and make people beloved. They haven't got to their sympathetic. This guy's going to get cut. And we're all going to, you know, have a little sadness in our hearts for him. Guy yet. It's mainly been a redemption of Aaron Rodgers, which I don't like, but I actually like don't hate Rodgers as much as I thought I would. and usually do, but there's just some dudes on that team. Garrett Wilson gets followed a lot. Sauce Gardner, some interesting guys. It's also maybe shadowed by I picked up Madden when it was free last year and played a dynasty with the Zach Wilson led Jets, and Sauce Gardner became an absolute MVP for my dynasty, and Saleh went into the Hall of Fame with multiple Super Bowl championships as the jacktest coach to ever win. So yeah, maybe that's coloring it as well. But yeah, it's been a good one.
Man, I like Hard Knocks. I'm not the biggest NFL guy, so it's always trouble for me. I need to go back and watch Winning Time. I've shied away from it. Winning Time is actually the show that ended Adam McKay and Will Ferrell's friendship. There's a funny story, not a funny story, a terrible story there, about the Jerry Buss role going to John C. Reilly instead of Will Ferrell. But again, anywho, that's just a longer conversation. I haven't seen it. It's on that list of like shows that I need to watch, and I know I need to watch, but I've got like a long flight coming up for work, so it may be just like a binge on in the air situation. And that's what we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
You can follow me on all the socials media at Kyle Carpenter. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer on Twitter.
You follow me on Twitter and Threads and X, I am, or whatever it's called. I am at GH Goodridge. Follow the show on Twitter or X, whatever. I'm never going to say it right. It's Twitter forever and ever, but at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, we're the Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. We'll be back next week with our big Alabama preview and then Kyle and I's favorite position group preview, specialists and special teams. We'll be back with that. We'll also have Mike Roach on next week to talk a little bit of national recruiting, because I'm not sure if you're aware, but Texas is making some waves. Thank you so much for tuning in again this week. And until next time, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. I'll watch Wyoming football before I watch Yellowstone.